Welcome to Renaissance Radio, second episode. I want to start off by telling my viewers who I received incredible feedback from that feedback has been absolutely inspiring to me. It only solidified that this journey I'm on is the right direction. And I can't wait to turn this into something that's going to evolve into something great. And I can't do it without you guys. So thank you. And look forward to your feedback in the future. Renaissance Radio, the station for reason, science, culture, education, ecology, and enlightenment. And we're here to talk about it, to create a new renaissance for the new age. If you never saw my first episode, I recommend you see that. That's where I lay out all the premises of what we got to do to create a new era for humanity based on those principles. It's idealistic. It's a vision for a new enlightenment and a new renaissance. Now, there are people who, believe it or not, do not want the next enlightenment to happen. That is a very dark fact, but it's true. It comes down to the dichotomy of those who want a world based on altruism versus those who subscribe to the archetype of selfishness. Those who are selfish want to see themselves at the top of the pyramid. They'll burn the whole world down if they could be king of the ashes. So here we are on the other side of that age-old battle. It's truly the battle of right and wrong, of good and bad. The battle of every single person maximizing themselves, being happy, being cultivated to their potential versus a paradigm of those who are subservient to the masters, oftentimes economic, sometimes military, but the masters nonetheless. It's a will of power. We need warriors on the other side because the entrenchment of it all is not easy to overcome, but with will, there is a way. So what we need and what we need you to be are Renaissance renegades. Now, power is the essence of life. Lord Acton, he said, what ultimately drives every society that has ever existed on this planet? The answer could not be simpler: power. And what Lord Acton said was power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So what is it that people are addicted to? Is it sex, money, love, respect, friends, status, drugs, possessions? All these things are ultimately manifestations of power. When people are afraid, it's because they lack power. What is God in most people's minds? Infinite power. By worshiping God, they are associating themselves with indefatigable power. Most people worship God because they are afraid not to. And that's no basis for a belief in a supreme being. As Nietzsche said, what is good? All that heightens the feeling of power, the will to power. Power itself in man. What is bad? All that proceeds from weakness. What is happiness? The feeling that power increases, that a resistance is overcome. The aim of conventional society is to create a pyramid of power with the power elite at the top and everyone else obeying their will. Once your place in the pyramid is set, there is virtually nothing you can do to escape. The opportunities for an ordinary person to rise are almost non-existent. And it takes a million to one chance, something like a lottery win or exceptional beauty or sporting ability or musical talent, to permit somebody from an ordinary background to ascend near the top of the pyramid, while the vast majority simply have to cling on to what they have and pray they don't fall. Now, is that any basis for life? Those at the top of the pyramid never fall, except when the other members of the power elite throw them to the dogs, like Bernie Madoff. But the point of power is to ensure that, barring exceptional criminality, you can never lose power. When you die, your power is transmitted to your offspring. It will reside in your family forever. And that is the gospel of the power elite, and it's the drumbeat to which the whole world has always been made to march. Even in the old Soviet Union, an allegedly communist country, they had the nomenklatura, the names who enjoyed the same privileges as the leaders of the West. And look how rapidly the collapse of the Soviet Union led to the rise of the oligarchs, who are one of the most outrageous gangster mobs who ever allowed to steal from the Soviet people all the natural resources of Russia and make themselves richer than even the czars. So why do so many people take part in a game that they can never win? That's stacked against them. That's rigged in every conceivable way. Imagine, for example, going to a casino and discovering that the house had a 99.9% chance of winning every game played. Only fools would play. Yet all of us are in such a casino, and the vast majority of us are choosing to play. Isn't it time to start a new game? One where we win rather than lose all the time? Now, capitalism, this is a psychological thing. It actually makes us hate ourselves, believe it or not. Let me give you some examples. The beauty industry makes people feel ugly. Why? Well, if everybody felt good about themselves, no one would need beauty products, would they? The beauty industry would collapse, and therefore the purpose of the beauty industry is to make people unhappy with their looks, to feel bad, ugly, and in urgent need of a remedy, supplied, of course, by the beauty industry itself. Along those lines, the health industry makes people feel ill. The celebrity industry makes people feel like nobodies. The wealth industry makes people feel worthless. The religious industry makes people feel evil. The social networking industry makes people feel socially isolated. These are all the manifestations of capitalism. And the point of capitalism is to make us feel bad about ourselves, to offer us the cure. And if we buy the right products, then we will be saved. And this is the mantra of capitalism. You need our product. If you don't have our product, you're deficient. Do you want others to know you're deficient? Well, only our product can remove your deficiency. And with our product, everyone will like you. You'll be more successful. You'll be happier, more confident, one of life's winners. And without our product, no one will like you. You'll be unsuccessful, unhappy, less confident. You'll be one of life's losers. What is your greatest fear? To be below average, one of life's losers, disliked by others, not respected, without friends, without possibilities, destined to live out your life in misery. You look at vagrants and beggars and you think that that could easily be you. So we live in a society of low self-esteem, self-hate, and perpetual anxiety. Our society is all about what we don't have, what we lack, what we need for salvation, and only our masters, our controllers, or capitalist providers can supply us with what we need. And that is how they exploit you. That's how they make money from you, and that's how they maintain their rule over all of us. They've relentlessly attacked our vulnerabilities using the most sophisticated psychological techniques to manipulate us. They've made us dependent on them. They've made us addicted to their propaganda. They relentlessly exploit fear. Their empire is built on fear, on making people feel bad and afraid, on making them dependent, scared of change, scared of taking responsibility, and scared of standing up and resisting their oppressors. That's why we're here today. The time for fear is over. Now is the time for strength. Now is the time for energy and for becoming who we truly are. On the last episode, I spoke a little bit about this. It's a huge influence on me, so I want to bring it up again. The Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist Addendum and Zeitgeist Moving Forward films, they've been viewed by tens of millions of people and all across the globe, and nobody has ever heard of these films discussed in mainstream newspapers, right? TV programs or politicians, they don't talk about it. And judging by the reaction of the media and cultural commentators, it really is as if these films never existed. Interesting. And yet, there's a massive audience, and that massive audience is being completely ignored. Why? Because the Zeitgeist films advocate a new society. They advocate taking power from those who currently have it and giving it to the people. They advocate a new world order where the people will be in charge. And who amongst the power elite would ever want to give any encouragement to that message, right? The upper echelons of society, they really try to operate a closed shop, right? They don't want to give time and space to dangerous ideas that threaten their hegemony. They're all in together, and it's so internalized in their behavior, they don't need to sit together and conspire. All of those that have positions in society know exactly what's expected of them, and one of the things is never to give publicity to revolutionary movements. Unless, of course, it is to condemn and call action against them. But, and this is a big but, Luckily, something new and radical is emerging triumphantly on the world scene. You might have heard of it, the internet. It provides a unique chance to change the world. The traditional outlets for news and information can be bypassed and the gatekeepers ignored. Tunnels can be dug beneath them, bridges over them, new gates constructed to public awareness. An enormous change is coming, and the power elite just do not get it. Their power is ebbing away. And granted, it will take a couple of years or a number of years, but of course, nevertheless, the process is now underway. You listening to this is a part of that. The elite have been masters of something called cultural capital, the means for controlling the debate, for deciding what the values of society should be. Every time you watch the news or listen to a politician or go to the movies or buy a mainstream book or see advertisements, you're being exposed to the agenda of the masters, the message that they want to get across, the shape of society that they wish you to acknowledge, which is, of course, always going to be in their favor and always hostile to your interests. So what they do is they actually impose their cultural values on you. So they start when you go to school, and they reinforce it in all the institutions in society. They tell you how wonderful freedom and democracy and free markets and capitalism are. They tell you to worship celebrities. You got to admire the bankers, applaud the super rich, support the politicians that they foist on you. Now, of course, you don't get to debate their values to challenge them, because they shut down all dissent by simply never giving any oxygen of that publicity. So in the past, this actually really was brutally effective, right? But now the internet actually allows a direct challenge to the cultural capital of the power elite. The 9/11 truth movement, right? And conspiracy theorists in general, right? Activists such as those that are associated with Zeitgeist and the such, they've all steadily eroded confidence in the establishment. Now, it doesn't matter that some of these movements just might be wrong in some ways, or some of them are spreading some crazy ideas in some instances, but the important point is that overall, they're no longer accepting the sacred word of the power elite. So this erosion of the respect normally afforded to those in power, this increase in cynicism, of skepticism, this ever-widening gulf between Wall Street and Main Street, it's going to grow and it's going to accelerate, right? The old order is collapsing before our eyes. So we can start preparing the funeral rites of this old world order, all right? No one's going to miss them. They reached the zenith of their power really just before the credit crunch brought their houses of cards tumbling down. So they called themselves the masters of the universe. They said that they were experts deserving of this mind-boggling financial rewards that they got. And they said that they had eliminated risk, right? They said that the world was safe in their hands. Well, they're never going to be believed again. Never. Their credibility, finally and once and for all, has been permanently destroyed. It's like the emperor in his new clothes. Finally, they are before us, standing naked before the world. They are fools, charlatans, conmen. They're pretenders to knowledge. They're money-obsessed maniacs, pigs with their snouts permanently in the money trough, and veritable scum of the earth. Now, no one could have been more dangerous to the stability and wealth of the world than these maniacs. They're like the riders of the apocalypse, right? War, famine, pestilence, poverty, chaos, death, and hell truly follow in the elite's wake, right? Their world crawls with greed and corruption, with profiteers and carpetbaggers. These vampires really do suck the planet's blood dry, and to further their interests, they would damn the entire world. So why wasn't the type of message shown in the Zeitgeist movies preached as far back as the Wall Street crash of 1929? The only reason, really, is because it was deliberately suppressed by the authorities. Now it's different. Now we have the internet to free the truth, right? Liberation is coming, and it will be delivered through cyberspace. Dissenting voices are arising everywhere. Heresy is rife. It's really only a matter of time before an online movement generates enough support to pose a full-scale challenge to the power elite. The content of this show would never have been possible under the pre-internet ruling regime, right? It's a threat to them. So they would never have allowed this message to be heard. But it is being heard now. All over the world, new voices are coming to the fore. And the authorities cannot stop them. At the moment, they're trying to ignore them, but I promise they're not going to go away. Each voice might be tiny, might be inaudible, but you put them all together and they have a mighty roar that can blow down empires. The Zeitgeist movies have struck a great blow for freedom. A breach has been made in the fortress of the power elite, and now the people have a chance to direct additional fire at the breach, to widen it, to consolidate the gap, and pour in their millions. Perhaps it will be you and your movement that leads the assault on the power elite stronghold, right? This movement might be the heroic vanguard that smashes through the last desperate defenses. Now, make no mistake, the power elite, they are tottering. Join the resistance and join the movement and make your voice count. Bring the world out of bondage and servitude into the bright light of the new golden dawn, a new world order, a new renaissance, a new enlightenment. All the pillars of Western society are in decline, right? Mainstream religion is failing to deliver a world of which anyone can be proud. The combination of free market capitalism and democracy has brought the world to the brink of financial ruin. Respect for politicians, bankers, lawyers, media moguls, businessmen, it's all at an all-time low right now. And the power elite have failed, and in the failure can no longer be concealed. Their army and police wait in the wings to impose their will, but the people are losing fear. The internet permits global communication. New ideas can cross the planet in literally seconds, and viral campaigns can change human consciousness overnight. At the moment, the internet is used for many frivolous, disconnected reasons, but that can all change. So one group of intelligent, energetic, determined people could seize the intellectual high ground via the internet and set the agenda for the future. Light the torch paper that brings a bright new dawn into the world. They could create a new political party to replace the corrupt and failed parties of the present, a new psychological understanding of humanity to ensure that each and every person is treated as an individual and their talents are actually maximized. A new world, a new life, a new dawn, and a new humanity. Can this movement change the world? Well, that depends on the merit, intelligence, zeal, and commitment of its members. And I ask you, can you make a difference? The future is ours if we choose to seize it truly. Now, what element of this old world order's, you know, arrogant edifices can you attack? Think about that. What can you attack? Start a campaign. Make a YouTube video. Blog. Create websites. Organize protests. Write to newspapers. Complain. Petition. But get out there and get in their faces. Now, Henry Ford rightly said that you cannot build a reputation based on what you're going to do. You must actually do something. Why not do one thing a day? A personal daily contribution to human freedom. It can be a very small thing, but it all adds up. So it's time to move from the society of the passive once and for all to the society of the active. And active we are. This is why I have my guest tonight, Twi. She is a very, very active person in local activism here in Los Angeles. I've been a part of local grassroots movements. She is a great leader in some of the grassroots movements that I've been involved in. Really the epitome of the society of the active. And this is why I wanted to bring her on today. Now, everything I'm talking about, it has to be overcome because the elite will not give it to us. They will not give it to us. If you wait, you'll wait forever. So I have somebody on today that exemplifies what it takes to go wrestle it back. Twi, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. I'm Twi with Revolution LA. We are a grassroots organization. We started up on Meetup about over a year ago now. And it sprung from my own passions for fighting inequality and injustices. And I knew that there were others, many others like myself, who were sitting there at home frustrated with the system, was know, determined to do something, but didn't know where to start. So I joined Meetup and literally created a space where people could literally meet up. So we started meeting in coffee shops as a brainstorming group to create a collaborative space and to build solidarity among the community where people could come together and talk about various issues. And that's evolved throughout the past year into the Vanguard brainstorming session. And now we've been doing the propaganda film series, which is the objective of which is to combat mainstream media propaganda. As you mentioned, that's a very big war that we're fighting here. It's the war of false information. And you have a lot of people who have been brainwashed and fed misinformation from corporately owned media. And so that is a big part of movement building, is to educate and empower and make as many people as possible become politically and socially conscious.
Absolutely. I think a great thing to look at is something like Meetup. This is actually how I found Revolution LA and became part of the leadership team of that group. That provides a really great example of going from online to offline. I talked earlier actually about how important online activism is. But you know what? In the end, there's no substitution for people getting together, right? We think of these old revolutionaries in the coffee shops. I mentioned this on my last show, getting together and networking with each other. How has Meetup proven to you to be something that is an exemplar of this new online revolution and really a phrase that we like to use, the evolution of revolution?
Well, it's taking online from 2D into 3D, where you have people actively meeting and talking about issues, revolutionary issues, you know, starting that dialogue is very important. And it's organically built from there.
Yeah. I think what has really, in my opinion, showed me how powerful that tool actually is it's a fusion of meeting people out in the streets, that grassroots activism that comes down to passing flyers and so on, but also the types of things we see on Facebook and Twitter, which really connect people very easily in ways that they otherwise wouldn't have been connected.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're able to get people together online and then use that as a jump start to get them together offline, then you have a situation where then you can meet people face-to-face, exchange numbers, right? What kind of networking have you been able to accomplish
and
doing what you're doing?
I just wanted to add that what Meetup actually really helped with was overcoming atomization, which is one of Gene Sharp's, you know, biggest principles is, oppressive regimes like to control people by keeping them as isolated systems.
Yeah.
So once you get people together and there is a solidarity among them, you're able to channel all that anger and frustration into a common vision through collective action. Mm-hmm. And that's how change can mm-hmm. be enacted.
I'm glad you brought that up. And that's actually something I want to get into. One of the Revolution LA meetup group events that we did was a recent screening of the documentary How to Start a Revolution, based on this gentleman, Gene Sharp, who actually came up with a list of 198 bullet points, all factors that play into undermining a regime. And it's all nonviolent, because what it essentially does is it leads to a situation in which those who follow orders say, no, sir. That one thing can undermine the entire elite, because if those at the top of the pyramid say, all right, go stop that protest, do this, do that, and then the head of the police or the head of whoever is managing that organizational force says, no, sir, I will not follow that order, you have to realize 100% of the elite's power actually is dependent on that. Now, one of the things that Gene Sharp talks about, which has been very inspiring to me, we can go over that, overcome atomization. You brought up a great example of that. By meeting people together, by being able to talk about it, by living the revolution in your daily life, the people that maybe aren't that passionate about it, they hear you talking about it, that might spark a little bulb in their mind, light bulb, but they're not going to go too far beyond that. But then they hear one more person talking about it. They hear one more person talking about it. Okay, what is this? Because we're social creatures and people like to do what's cool. Only the vanguard is going to go against the grain. But when we get that tipping point, that threshold of people that care about what other people think, and if they care about what other people think and other people think that the revolution is cool, then there's no stopping it when we hit that threshold. What else from Gene Sharp was inspiring for you?
Slogans. Slogans is plays a very big part in the success of nonviolent action. When you look in history, you have the Black Power's Power to the People, which was an anti-establishment statement of the 1960s to protest the control of the rich and the elites. And then you had, going back further in history, you had Marx and Engels' Workers of the World Unite, which was, you know, a small combination of words, which really spoke to the urgency of the call to action that when the proletariats, the workers, were able to have a collective understanding of the condition, only then would they be able to unite to create a strength in numbers, which then takes us to the Occupy movement and 99% versus 1%, which was quite very successful in their own right, because they took the idea of income inequality and put that into public discourse, probably for the first time since the days of the Communist Manifesto. So sloganeering is a very important tool.
That's a really interesting point, because it goes to what I said in the intro, right, about how the elites actually use propaganda and psychological techniques to use it against us. Check out the documentary about Edward Bernays. It is about the way that the elites figured out how to manipulate the human mind to get it to do things that it otherwise wouldn't want to do. This is called Century of the Self. And what that reminds me of when you talk about sloganeering is how the capitalists, the super capitalists, use branding and advertising. And people think of branding as a fundamentally capitalist thing, but it's actually not. It's a psychological technique that the capitalists, simply because of their will and their money and their effort towards using it, figured out the way to manipulate people the best, as well as governments that were not pro people, that use this tool of sloganeering and branding and marketing to actually get people to believe things that are against their own interests. So it's up to the revolutionaries to counteract the psychological propaganda into great slogans of their own. We're really just using their own tools against them in that regard. So that's a great one.
Yep. Another one would be consumer boycotts through civil disobedience of Martin Luther King era. You saw that the Montgomery bus boycott was extremely effective in that. Their nonviolent tactics were obviously met with violence, but then again, that was perpetrated by the oppressed, the oppressors, and not the oppressed. So that made nonviolence become a very powerful tool for the movement, which then led to the Civil Rights Act of 1964. In more recent times, you have the success of the anti-GMO movement, which just started off with, you know, concerned citizens who wanted to know the transparency in the food they eat, and demanding justice against biotech industries that were poisoning the global food supply. Yeah. You know, that consciousness spread through social media. It spread through people overcoming atomization, talking to their friends and family about GMO. And that's, we've obviously seen the success with that through the GMO labeling now and packaging. And the last march against Monsanto was a global march with over 400 cities worldwide, 200 people who took to the streets. Consumer boycotting is a very important tool for citizens to leverage their power through consumer dollars.
That reminds me what Chris Hedges said. He's a great revolutionary speaker. He was quoting Ralph Nader when Ralph Nader said that Nixon was the last liberal president. And this is what he meant by that. Obviously, Nixon was no liberal. And obviously, there's people who arguably were more liberal ideologically than him later. So what did he mean by Nixon was the last liberal? What he meant by that was he, for example, started the EPA, among other liberal enterprises through the government. And people wonder, why is it that a Republican did all that? It's because the spirit of the times was a lot more revolutionary than what it became later after the Reagan years. You see, when Nixon was stuck away in the White House with Henry Kissinger, and this was in Henry Kissinger's memoirs, he was shaking in his boots because people had lined up buses around the street blockading the White House, and Nixon had mentioned some fear that they're going to be storming the White House soon. So when you get the elites shaking in their feet, you actually enact change because they're forced to react to you. You know, in chess, you want to when you put somebody in check, they're forced to react to you. They might have had another plan before, but now they're in check. They have no choice but to get out of it. So put pressure on him. I love that. What else?
Protest. Use your right to peaceably assemble. We have the People's Climate March, which was the largest climate march in history. You know, over 150, 160 countries in the world participated. Hundreds of thousands of people on the streets, you know, and this was organized by at a grassroots level, you know, but with environmental groups, with schools, with businesses. This is the type of action we need to see on a mass level. So we need to make as much noise as we can. Another example would be the Fight for 15, which is the fast food is a fight that's being led by fast food workers, underpaid fast food workers. And that started out in New York a few years ago with over 200 protesters, you know, just fighting for their economic justice and demanding fair pay and union rights. The city of Los Angeles has approved the $15 minimum wage by 2020, San Francisco as well, and New York has passed a new state mandate. So we are seeing the successes of these types of intelligently led, nonviolent, civil disobedient acts all throughout the country.
And it's worth noting, even though I'm going to simply be stating the obvious, that those in power did not say, I have an idea. Why don't we make the new minimum wage $15 an hour? That might make them happy. No, they had to get fought for that. And every struggle or every result of policy that ends up being pro people power is always the result of a struggle, never the result of a handout.
That's why, a big part in another big part in movement building is educating yourself.
Yes.
You have to understand the system in order to know how to fix it. Mm-hmm. Just like if you were to cure a disease, you want to get to the source of the illness. Mm-hmm. So if you are inspired to start a movement, I recommend to read up on revolutionary theory, mm-hmm. So you can understand the history of class struggle, so you can understand the creation of the state, how it's organized, its apparatus, and that's how you can effectively learn to replace that system.
Yeah.
That's that our Buckminster Fuller quote. You replace an obsolete system with a new system. Mm-hmm. So we need to be able to learn from the revolutionary lessons of the past in order to build and to innovate for the future.
It starts within. All movements, are really going to have a vanguard. It is those that understand it deeply in a complex way that will be able to make the right analysis, the right judgments to strike in a way that is the most effective and to lead people.
Yeah, and it's important to note that it's not a class of people; it's an organization, and what the vanguard is. The vanguard is essentially made of the most politically conscious people, yet their job is to help educate and empower others, to mm-hmm. disseminate ideas, to teach, to energize and win over the masses so that this could be a collective fight.
It's there's a vanguard in every way. There can be a vanguard in negative sense of those who are at the top of the pyramid, but they use their power to dominate, whereas those who have that intellectual capacity on the right side of history, the altruistic side, will then use their intelligence and power and dominance to actually empower everybody. That's the whole dichotomy.
Exactly, and at the crux of nonviolence and civil disobedience action is education, mm-hmm. is for people to become politically conscious so that they can use intelligence as a tool combined with the unity in action.
What this comes down to is like the hero archetype. We watch movies and shows and all that, and we always see heroes, and we always are drawn to heroes. Luke Skywalker and Neo and Odysseus. But it's always people that are willing to transcend the world of the mundane. But what that takes is a lot of internal will, because the easiest thing in the world is to just come home and watch your TV, right? And it feels good to do that. It feels good to get distracted. But it feels even better to overcome adversity. But it's a lot harder. So we need to become heroes. And I hope that those listening get that fire to become a hero themselves. And, you know, this is New Renaissance Radio. If you heard my first podcast, that was about the vision of creating a new enlightened society. And the reason why I wanted to make this second episode on this in particular, because we're going to have a lot of guests with a lot of different niche elements of that new enlightenment. I wanted to make this my second episode because this is where theory goes into practice, right? We can sit in a coffee shop or online and then talk about Zeitgeist all day and talk about the enlightenment all day. But then if we go home and then go back to work and then go back to TV, it was intellectual masturbation. We need to actually get physically active. And this is why this is the next episode I'm doing, is because we need you to actually make that imminent, to take it back and to actually be the leaders of tomorrow. So let's talk a little bit about Revolution LA, because that's an example of that, right? You gave a great intro. Isn't it interesting that both you and I, at some point in the past, had nothing to do with Revolution whatsoever, but we became very active in learning more about it. People that were around, that we meet, that are involved with the Revolution, that we all started before without that my mentality. But then as we started to learn more, there was a spark that made us go, okay, I'm going to go from nothing to something in this. I'm going to go from not doing anything about it to doing something about it. And that's an infinite leap. So how do you see, influencing and inspiring people who I think are awakening in swaths right now? There's so many awakened people compared to what there used to be, but there's a sense of, I don't know what to do though. What now, right? What would you say to people like that?
Get out there. And if you're not ready to create a sort of collaborative space for others, then join an existing organization. You know, be surrounded by people who are conscious, you know, because the more you are engaged in those sorts of dialogues, the more you're able to come up with new ideas. This is all about growing organically, yet also innovating. And my best advice is just to start educating yourself so that you understand what's broken in the system, which gives you a clear context of, you know, what the source of all the social and economic problems that we're experiencing comes from, which then gives you an idea of where to begin, you know, whether you want to tackle Monsanto or whether you want to deal with climate change and ecological respect. You know, there are so many things in our systems that needs to be revolutionized, and ultimately it comes down to, you know, your personal passion. But, you know, we do realize that we live in a very oppressive, antagonistic system, and it's not working for the majority of the people. 47 million people are living below the poverty line. That's no longer a conspiracy. You know, we have to do something, because we are very much tied into the system. And a big part of grassroots movement building is literally seeing the revolutionary movement as evolving energy systems. Mm-hmm. And so you want to, you know, network and ally with people, tying yourself to a greater network of ideas and resources.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's going to be people out there that look in the mirror and say, all right, damn it, I'm ready to actually do something. I'm going to start a group. I'm going to organize people together. I'm going to network with activists, right? So from somebody that has been very active, very proactive and great at organizing, what advice would you give to a young, you know, future activist that's ready to start changing their life and becoming a hero but doesn't know where to go yet? What advice would you give? What trials and tribulations do you think they'd come across? What are some good things that they can do to be successful?
You know, I started protesting when I was about 15 years old. Mm-hmm. I started attending anti-war protests then. So I think that's a great way for younger people to kind of feel that revolutionary spirit. Mm-hmm. It's a very different thing talking or reading theory, you know, or talking to someone about it, and then entering a space like a protest rally where you've got just a mass group of people united for no other reason but to change the world.
Yeah.
and for the better.
Yeah.
And so just feeding off of that energy is just very inspiring. Mm-hmm. So go to protest rallies. You know, start seeing what sort of groups are in your area and just start communicating, start dialoguing. If you're not ready to enter 3D, go online and, you know, follow politically or socially conscious blogs. We just allied with a very big revolutionary mastermind on Instagram, Tukro, who posts a lot of great conscious content. You know, follow those accounts to start getting yourself educated on what the problems are in this world.
I'd like to add to that, you know, in business, right? Just in the world of, you know, the mundane, the capitalist paradigm of just go out and make money and be a business owner or whatever. The number one thing that's often espoused or advice that's given is go network, right? There's networking events for business owners and things like that, right? That same principle applies to this, the exact same thing. You know, if you go to a protest, you're automatically filtering out everybody other than people that are really passionate about what they do, willing to go that far out of the way. And it's an emotionally visceral experience. So that's where you go and you get numbers, you know? It helps to... You know, if you're going to go to a place like that, I guarantee you go to a couple of them, you're going to find somebody that says, hi, I'm so-and-so, I run this organization. Hi, I'm so-and-so, I do this. Yeah. You go, okay, here, let's exchange info.
Exactly. You find the freedom fighters. Mm-hmm. They are there.
They are out there. Yeah. So network. That is a huge thing I recommend. You know, if you have a hero online, you know, maybe a speaker or something like that, shoot them an email, you know, maybe they'll ignore you, but maybe they'll say, wow, I'm inspired by your words. Yeah, this is what I do. We'll be in touch. Let's grab lunch. Right. Don't be afraid to go out there. You know, like a business venture, except it's the revolutionary, you know, neural network of, you know, like minds. And, there's nothing like a good Rolodex, whether it's for business or for contacts, to do this. Now in the future, we're going to, I believe, see a really, really different paradigm economically. People are going to start going into the streets. You might have seen on my Facebook recently, I posted this analysis of where the market is and how it's in an extraordinarily high bubble right now, and it's poised to pop at some point. And what I wanted to discuss is that it might feel like the revolution is brewing, but it still feels, you know, almost kind of fringe. But 2008 happened, right? 1929 happened. These things happen. And when they do, it is in a situation where people are losing their jobs. People are really having their livelihoods destroyed by, of course, the outcomes of the elite dominance over the economy again. And then the hour of change will be nigh. Right now is the time to get out there, converse with people, network, build the connections. But I'm giving you my prediction now that within the next few years, this fervor is going to reach fever pitch. And if you're listening to this and you're in the vanguard, then you'll be one of the people that's going to lead the swarms of new people that weren't thinking about revolution before, but now they are, and they're going to say, whoa, what do we do now? So start to build your infrastructure now, be ready for it, and then you're going to have a lot more people following down the line. So keep that up. Now, in regards to Revolution LA, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that we've done in our own experience. You know, we've done some movie screenings, some brainstorming discussions. Tell them a little bit about that.
We've done, we started off doing brainstorming sessions. That was, you know, it was trying to get people in a space where we could collectively be able to talk about issues. And through that, we've, we started networking with various organizations like ANSWER, and who is a very powerful ally in Los Angeles. They are the biggest anti-racism anti-war group. They've been a fantastic group of passionate people.
Just add real quick, networking right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. We started doing the propaganda film series. Once again, that's another way to generate dialogue and kind of give clarity in some of the root causes of the class and national oppression that we deal with. You know, the first screening we did was Capitalism, a Love Story, and, you know, taking a look at the crash of 2008 and, real, you know, so talking about how the American dream we've been sold is really a nightmare. And we followed that up with Inside Job, which was a deeper, more detailed look at the financial institutions, mm-hmm. which caused the crash. You know, once again, looking at the collusion between big banks and the government and how we really do live in a system that places the needs and interests of private individuals over the greater needs and well-being of the people. So, you know, disseminating ideas and spreading truth, combating mainstream media propaganda has been a very, you know, big driving force for Revolution LA. Mm-hmm. And we continue, you know, that's something that we're going to continue doing.
And I'll point out the name is Propaganda, right?
Yes.
Propaganda. It's a twist to play on words. We're putting propaganda in its place.
Exposing, you know, we're there to expose the fraudulent financial system that we live in. You know?
We're the children saying that the emperor has no clothes.
Yep.
I really like the film screenings because they serve a couple of purposes. On the one hand, you know, we do it through Meetup, and then people come by just seeing that there's a screening coming up. But we've also passed around flyers, right? That's mm-hmm. another kind of classic grassroots type of movement change that you can do. You listening, whatever state you're in, whatever country you're in, you know, you just the power of simply passing out flyers, going to events that are revolutionary minded and exchanging information and then posting a thing online where that people can congregate. You have no idea because it starts off with just an idea in your head. Next thing you know, there's a few people and you might meet one person that has a great thing going on and then he inspires you and then you connect and that makes you meet other people. But the key is doing the first thing. But these screenings, I highly recommend. If you do want to do screenings of
film screenings and discussions.
Film screenings and discussions, exactly. So what we do is we do the screening, and that serves the purpose of awakening people and maybe showing them something that they need to see. And then afterwards, we have discussions, and we get people's input and so on. And then we recommend after that, everybody networks. And, man, I tell you, just three screenings in and you can really see change and momentum building in this, and I think it's going to be something a lot bigger down the line.
There's 99% of us.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. There's advantages on both sides, but darn it, we do have the numbers, and not only that, but the right side of history on
exactly.
our side.
Exactly. It's all about getting those numbers to move from a willing obedience to a civil disobedience.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where the overcoming atomization comes in. You know, like I said, I remember just being. I'm in my late 20s now, but I remember just being in my early 20s. That's when I started to awaken, quote unquote. And I felt like, whoa, I live in the Matrix. What the heck can I do, right? And the elite's propaganda not only on the one hand distracts you, you know, what the Romans called bread and circuses, which makes you forget, you know, if you have your shopping and your TV and your video games and your this and your that, you don't care about all that. And then the next phase of that is even if you do care, you're made to feel like so insignificant that you can't do anything about it. You're a nobody anyways, right? But the only person that defines how much of a nobody or somebody you are is really yourself. If you look in the mirror and you say, that is a hero, I'm ready to make things happen and ready to be somebody great, just telling yourself that and can raise that vibration internally to make you willing to go out there and really bring forth this new renaissance that's going to be dependent on the grassroots to actually
help,
work.
And help educate and empower others.
And educate and empower others.
Because, you know, when we really look at it, a lot of the problems that we have are a result of people giving their consent.
Yes.
You know, and that comes from a lack of proper education and ability to really understand in depth the causes of various social, economic, and political injustices. So, you know, mm-hmm. the more we educate, the more we empower people, the stronger we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I want everybody listening to really think of themselves. I want you to think of yourself as somebody capable of being the type of person, you know, that in your Rolodex, to use an outdated term, but in your cell phone list, in your email list, that you can have some of the most powerful people. And I don't mean powerful in the elite sense, but powerful in the, they have a high will to power. There's organizers and leaders of the resistance. You can be not only in contact with these people, but be one of those people. Because those people themselves started out without not being like that, and then they became like that. What we need to do is overcome the propaganda that makes us feel like nobodies. That I cannot stress enough.
The fear.
The fear, yeah. You know, it all comes to consent. By believing of yourself that we cannot change anything, we will create a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, another thing I like to criticize as well is, and this comes to the idea of not wanting to overcome it, even if you know something's wrong. This idea of, you know, love is all you need, love and light brigade. All you have to do is not think about the elite and then it won't be the problem. Just meditate on it. What are some problems you think about that?
You know, being passive is very disempowering, mm-hmm. because, you know, love is absolutely a very fundamental, you know, power of life, yet it needs to be combined with action on a mass scale. You know, projecting love isn't going to end world hunger, nor is it going to help with homelessness. Mm-hmm. You know, there needs to be an intelligent understanding of some of our systemic problems and then a vision and a strategy behind that.
Yeah, if I were, you know, in the elite, if I was sitting with my big cigar that I'm lighting with my $100 bill and my $5,000 suit up in the skyscraper, and then I was, you know, getting a briefing on, sir, there's this love and light movement now, and yeah, you know, they're aware of us, but they think that if they sit and meditate, we'll be overthrown. I would say, ha, perfect. I hope that keeps going on. As a matter of fact, here, let's put some propaganda out there to actually encourage that. That's what I want. So, love and light. Yeah.
I do love the I you know, no more power to the love and light people, but I hope that they become even empowered to take that to another level.
Yeah.
Because being of the love and light mentality, you know, that they're connected to
everything. They're on the right side.
Exactly.
They're on the good side.
When you're connected to everything, you feel a sense of responsibility. So therefore you have to fight. You have to fight when you see the level of injustices that we have today.
I think that there's a matrix of four things. There's good side, bad side, and then high will to power, low will to power. If you're good on the high will to power, you're a freedom fighter, right? Those are the Malcolm X's, the Gandhis, the Martin Luther Kings, hopefully all my audience. On the other side, you have bad and high will to power. That's the elites, right? People that go and take it and... You know, this hedge fund manager that raised the rates of that AIDS pill from 35 to 700 or whatever he made it, that huge increase of AIDS cost, that is a guy that hustled his way up, high will to power, but evil.
Yep, that's Ayn Rand right there for you.
Oh, yeah.
Cultural system.
Ayn Rand is a perfect example of high will to power and evil.
Yep, that definitely, because, I mean, and that speaks to this type of paradigm shift that we need. Mm-hmm. We need to completely shift our cultural values.
That's right. Now, the other two on the matrix is low will to power and on the bad side, or selfish, I should say. And I think that's actually most people that don't care about politics, don't care about others, but they want to go shop, right? That's actually probably the minority, is selfish, low will to power. And then you have altruistic, low will to power, and that's the Love and Light Brigade. So they're on the right side, they're altruistic, but they're not gonna make the elites shake in their boots, that's for sure. So guys, high will to power, rev it up, get that vibration up in your mind, increase the frequency of your drive and your will. Believe in yourself that you're a hero. Get out there and network, organize, strategize.
And please realize that all the freedoms and liberties we have today are the result of freedom fighters who stood up, who challenged the system and demanded change.
Great point.
Rise up.
Have you ever read a history book and said, "Yeah, the Civil Rights Act was enacted after this group meditation"? Right. That's not history. You never say, "Oh, this revolution happened after everybody sat and meditated."
Like, well, a meditation combined with the unity.
Well, I'm not saying meditating is bad. No, there's a point to it. I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
We got to be powerful and empower ourselves. So episode 2 of New Renaissance Radio. Thank you for tuning in, and Let's get this renaissance started. Till next time, Phoenix Goodman. Thank you, Twee.
Thank you.